How is everybody doing?
Not bad.
Cool. Okay, so Shell Lab is a thing of the past now. It is in our rearview mirror. I do still have people from my section who haven't turned anything in for Shell Lab yet. So here's what is up with that. I am anybody who hasn't submitted anything, I'm going to extend the deadline automatically to tonight at midnight. If you take advantage of that, great. If for some reason you need further extension, I just need you to reach out to me and let me know what's going on. Because some of you I haven't heard from yet, so I don't know if people are like planning on dropping the course still, because I know that's still an option, or if like you want to take it. You know, there's other stuff. So I just want to know what's happening with you guys. Also, if you used your grace day on this lab and you end up needing it for attack lab, I will give you that grace day back. Or if you had already used your grace day and so you have incurred a late penalty with Shell Lab, please let me know and I'll fix that for you. I don't want anybody to have lost points on this lab with what's going on because of what's going on. You know? So if you need that back, like just let me know. Everybody who turned it in on time, I appreciate it. I'm sure you also appreciate the fact that like you don't have to think about it anymore, and it's just done. So that's that little bit of administrative, you know, stuff. What else? Oh, so we have we're going to starting next week, I think, maybe either Monday or Wednesday. We will have a, there'll be a little passcode you have to put in order to get into our Zooms, which as of now have just been like open. As long as you have the link, you can join. We're trying to be proactive in preventing like random people from joining our Zooms, although that has not been a problem. Honestly, shocking because I know these are just riveting lectures. But just in case, we want to make sure that like these aren't open to the public or to, you know, bots like looking for random Zooms to crash, because Zoom is like not the most super secure application. It just happens to be very convenient for what we're using it for right now. So we'll post that code in Slack for anybody who is not in lecture today, but just for you guys, it's going to be the very hard to remember 2467, which is, as you know, our course number. So if you log in next week to Zoom, it may ask you for that little ID or for that code, and it'll be 2467. So there you have it. Any other questions about any of that stuff? I think that Zoom has been working pretty well. I've been seeing some of you guys in help hours and stuff. I've had like really weird internet access issues, but that is because they're like, I finally figured out that it's tied to the fact that they're replacing all of our like electric and gas lines in my neighborhood. So it's been messing with everything. And I think that that is hopefully done in my part of my neighborhood. So I should be back in normal, like, my quicker. So yeah, I just want to touch base with you guys. Also, even if you've decided for some reason that you're like not gonna turn in a shell lab because you want to risk it, you just want to pass the class, and you're like, whatever, I can pass the class without those 40 points. If you could still drop me an email just so I know what's going on with you. If I haven't heard from you yet, I'd love to hear from you, is basically it. Or I'd love to hear from you by the end of this weekend, you know, if I need to do something, if we work on something else. But we are going to put some guys to set up a tech lab. And it's going to be really similar to Bomb Lab stuff. You're going to be working in GDB. So that is that. I think, let's see if we've got anything else posted on the schedule. New slide set is up, right? Yes. Okay, cool. Great. So, yeah, so Monday will be a great day to not miss. We will have like that little walkthrough, and I think that helps a lot as far as getting things set up and not having to rely entirely on that handout. Also, it'll be nice. I don't know how many of you guys have been using SSH, but now is the great. So if we weren't really forcing you guys to do it for when we had access to the labs and stuff, and because of Guacamole, you can still of course use like Guacamole, but SSH is also going to be very easy, like really easy solution to this being away from the thin clients situation. Okay, does anyone have any comments, questions, anything that they want to share? Anything? Been a long week. It's Friday. And I'm very tired. So I don't know how you guys are feeling. It feels weird that Friday is still, I still feel exhausted on Fridays. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what we have just wrapped up with Shell Lab stuff. We talked a lot about processes. We talked a lot about the memory hierarchy and virtual memory. And I'm hoping that you guys have some sort of like mental mapping of how all of these things kind of like fit together and how they combine in our system and how they work together and what they all like give to each other. Because it all kind of is an interwoven, it's all pieces of the same puzzle. And I hope that that is, like that overview at least gave you that. We're gonna step back from all of that stuff. We're gonna go back to chapter 3, which was a pretty long chapter, and yeah, SSH is great. And also setting up, yeah, I also like to do, you probably won't have to do it for Attack Lab. I don't know why you would, but having your code set up to be able to remote access is also like really helpful. But I think for the remaining of the remainder of the semester, you should be able to get away with just using SSH, which is fantastic. Okay. Okay, this is more Attack Lab info, so that'll...
And we have a lot of time to work on it.
But that is probably because I did not do a git pull before I copied these slides over. I don't know, which means I probably should actually just use the slides on the website, actually, because these are old slides. Give me one more second, I'm just going to do this, even though I hate it. Okay. I can't do that. I'm sorry. If you tried to click the slides on the website, you probably got an error, or at least I just did, a 404. So we will fix that. That's good to know. I have to grab those slides again. So hang out for a sec. Sorry.
Has anybody here not seen Tiger King?
I'm on the third episode. There was a podcast about this exact thing, like a very podcast. It was a scene of Over My Dead Body. And so I already know the whole story. So it's really just watching the people, which is still, it's still bananas. Okay, so. Okay, here we go. No, these are still. Okay, here we go, finally. Okay. This is what we kind of just talked about. So we're going to talk about, we're going to start talking about procedures. I'm actually going to skip this stuff. Okay. So we're going to start talking about procedures again, and how these things work on a lower level. Because we all have kind of a higher level view, and you know, I know you guys are used to calling these like methods from Java. I didn't realize this, but Matt said this today, that methods are actually exclusive to objects. So because C is not like an object-oriented language, we have procedures. We've seen all this stuff happen. We're all familiar with programming. We're all familiar with like the convention of like calling and returning at this point, especially because now we've we've all done some stuff in, we've all done some programming in C. There are a few things, a few concepts that we're going to like jump more in depth with. One of them is passing control. So looking at like control flow from a lower level within the procedure standpoint, specifically other function calls, we're going to look at how data gets passed between different procedures, how we you know, pass in parameters, how we return data back to the like caller procedure, the caller function. We're also going to look at memory management. So we're going to look at how this stuff, and as we know, because we've done so much talking about memory at this point, like our memory is just a big array of bytes. So we're going to look at how memory gets allocated during while these procedures execute, and then how it gets deallocated like upon the return. So if you look at this little like baby example on the side here, we've got a few things going on. We've got this procedure P that does a call to another function Q. It also, it has a local variable Y, and that value that they pass in as X to Q gets returned from Q and then assigned to some variable in P. And then if we look at Q, we have that like passing in of that parameter. We have some like local memory usage there. And then we have a return value that we have to deal with. So there's a lot going on there. That's just that like illustration of those passing of data back and forth. And this, like I said, some functions will have their own like their own variables, their own like memory that needs to be allocated and then deallocated as soon as that, like, for that we finish executing that procedure. So all of this stuff, as we're going to see, is implemented with machine instructions, and we're going to look at it in assembly. The way that our x86-64 systems implement this is that depending on the procedure, this could be different every time. So it only does, it has this like simple view of the procedures. It will only ever do the things that it needs to do. So there's no like set template for like, so every time this happens in this order, it's going to depend on what is going on with and the characteristics of like each procedure. There are of course like certain things that do happen like every time, but like it, we'll dive into that like a little bit more. So it makes it a little bit more complicated, but I think it's actually like, it's not bad. It's pretty easy once you get the hang of like what happens when we start like dealing with like control flow and calling and returning and stuff. Does anyone have questions? I'm gonna like probably ask for questions like after every few slides, just to give you guys time to respond. Also, because I tend to like move pretty quickly through this stuff, I just want to make sure that, like, you know, I can answer questions if I need to. Okay, so before we talk about any of this stuff, let's talk about the stack. You guys are probably all familiar with this, with the concept at least of a stack from other classes, right? Like, this was an eon ago, but I'm pretty sure like you learn about like implementing a stack in Java. You learn about it as like a data structure, and you have some concept of like what some of the characteristics are of it, right? So when we're looking at things in memory, the stack is nothing special, right? It's just an allocated, a like specific like allocated like part of our memory. So we have this bigger, each process, as we remember, has its own like array of memory addresses, of virtual addresses that it's able to use in different ways. And so part of that will be, you know, your code, part of it will be data or your heap, and also part of it's gonna be your stack. So these different regions within memory are gonna have different purposes, and this by convention is going to like be the same basically across like all the all different like processes. So in general, we talked about, I think there might even be a diagram of it. We talked about how we've got stuff, all of our like instructions will generally start at like that like 4000 whatever hex address. There's like different conventions like that as to where things go across processes. But really when it when you like strip away all of the fancy stuff, the stack is just an array of memory addresses that is allocated somewhere in our processes memory, right? So nothing complicated there. So this region of memory is managed with stack, with what is called stack discipline. And if you remember, the thing that I always remember from these, like from the data structures aspect of stacks is that like last in, first out stuff. So stacks do, the stack does have a couple of like special things about it. So this always takes a little bit of time for me to get used to because I'm used to diagramming stacks in the opposite direction. I'm like just getting on board actually with the way that we do it in systems. So I always have to think about it a little bit harder, which I think is helpful because it's probably hard to remember and conceptualize in the beginning anyway. So our processes, our memory starts, if you remember, whoops. If you remember, we're gonna have our high addresses up here and our low addresses down at the bottom, right? So we have our stack. The bottom of the stack is actually going to be a pretty high memory address. And the stack is going to grow downward. So as we add things to our stack, we have this stack pointer, this RSP that is going to point to the top of our stack. And as we add things, what we're going to do actually is decrement that stack pointer. So as it grows, we decrement the stack pointer as we add things, like we add them at a lower memory address, right? But that is how it works. Does anyone have a question about that or need clarification? Okay, so like I said, we have top of the stack currently is. Let's see what we got going on here. So, this is the address, this where the stack pointer is the address of the top element, which is like the newest thing to get added to the stack, right? So we have things that are, have been on the stack longer are going to be at the bottom of our stack, up at the higher addresses, and things that are newer will be pushed into these like lower addresses as that stack pointer gets decremented. So this is like kind of a hard thing actually to diagram for you guys without having like a whiteboard or something. But as things get added, actually let me see what's next. This might be helpful if I just stick with the slides. Okay, so I'm going to move through push and pop, and then I'll see if you guys still have questions. So I think that this might be helpful. So we have these two like special stack instructions that are push and pop. And it can be written push Q or pop Q. You've maybe seen that too. It doesn't matter. I think that maybe the push Q, pop Q are more common in AT&T, but I might be making that up. So they mean the same thing. So what's going to happen when a push instruction gets executed is we're going to fetch some bit of data at this source address. So wherever it tells us to push, we're going to grab data from there. We're going to decrement our RSP by 8 bytes. And then we're going to write that operand at whatever is at that address that we were given by that like push, we're going to write that data onto our stack. So now we have effectively like pushed that data onto our stack, right? Whether that is like an address or, you know, whatever other stuff from memory we've got going on. In fact, I actually believe that it's always going to be pushing addresses on, and then, you know, we can look at what's in those addresses further. So this is like another example of the bottom of the stack is actually at the top of the diagram. I don't know about you guys, when I did assembly, that's not how we diagrammed it. So it took me a while to get used to this. And then the top of the stack is at the bottom of that diagram, growing downward and growing and decreasing in memory. Our pop is going to kind of work in the opposite way. We're going to take whatever's on the top of our stack there. We're going to read that value wherever RSP is pointing, which remember RSP is at our stack top. We're going to increment RSP by 8. So we're going to deallocate that like top of that old top of the stack. And then we're going to store that, at the destination. So, and I think it's also important to like remember that even though we are moving the RSP, whatever was at this address is still there. We don't like clear that part of memory. So until it gets overwritten by something else getting pushed onto the stack, that old stuff is still in memory. It's just, there's nothing pointing to it that would direct us there anymore, right? Okay, so now that we have looked at the stack a little bit, let's talk about our like calling conventions. So we have these little pieces of code, and we've given them to you in C and in assembly so that you can see we've got a couple of different functions. We have this mult store function that's going to call mult2 and pass in some parameters, and then mult2 will return some value whenever it returns, right? So this is actually pretty similar to like that little simple bit of code that we saw earlier in the slides. And if you look at the way that this is set up, so if you, let me see if this goes. Where did that slide go? There we go. So if you look at what's happening here, we have this call to mult2. And if we look at it in our assembly instructions, embedded in these like call instructions are the addresses to wherever they're going to basically jump to. Like a call is kind of like a labeled jump, right? So wherever we're like passing control off to, we've got that address embedded into that call. We are going to, when we do that, save our, let me actually do this because this is not, we're going to save the return address on the stack. So we're going to push where we return to onto the stack, and we will then be able to, and remember when we're pushing that return address, we'd be pushing this like 400, I'm sorry, every time I click it, it changes and I like cannot get used to it. So we're gonna call here, so we would go ahead and push this return address onto the stack so that whenever we return, we remember where, we know where to return to, right? This should all sound kind of familiar from Bomb Lab. Like we've already kind of looked at this like control flow stuff a little bit because you had to be able to kind of figure out what was going on when you were trying to find out what parameters you should pass in. So we push that return address onto the stack. We do that jump. And then whenever we, the return address will be right here. Whenever we return, we pop that address from the stack and we go ahead and jump to that address. So we have the instruction pointer and the program counter that are going to let us know like what instruction is going to be executed next and where we are like in the program. After we've pushed that return address, that is how we're able to go ahead and like jump to that other part of memory where we want to execute this other function. Like that address gets used, like I said, that's embedded in that call instruction, that the program counter is able to use that address and the instruction pointer gets updated so that it's now pointing at this new place in memory, this new function. That's how that call works. So here is an example of this. So we have, this is the same code we're just looking at. It's just diagrammed out. So let's pretend for now that this is our stack, this little blue piece over here. And our stack, right now the top of our stack is at 120. So our RSP right now is pointing to the top of the stack at 120. We are currently, our instruction pointer is currently pointing to this call. We go ahead and push this next instruction's address to the stack, right? So that we know where to return to. And then we're able to do that jump to this new function, to this mult2, and go ahead and start executing in this new function. So our instruction pointer is now pointing to 400550. Our RSP was decremented by 8 bytes. So that's going to be at 118 now, pointing to that return address until something else gets pushed. Does that make more sense with the diagram? I feel like it's helpful to have that. And we're going to go more into depth with which of these procedures does which part, like who does the push and who does the like updating of RIP and et cetera, but just for now, this is like a little bit of overview of like what is happening. Okay, cool. So we know what our push does. We know what our call, what our call does. The return kind of like undoes the call for us, right? So once we get to our return, we are going to pop that return address, right? So we, that didn't show us as much as I was gonna do. We're gonna go ahead and pop that return address and increment our RSP again. And then we can go ahead and again, like update the instruction pointer to go back to that instruction that was immediately following our call instruction, right? So now our RSP is back at 120. We incremented it by 8 bytes again, and and we updated our instruction pointer. And like I said before, like this, that address, this 400549 is still at 118. It's just been deallocated in the sense that it's no longer a part of the stack. It's no longer like a part of anything special. It will eventually likely get overwritten probably in the very near future, if this is any kind of like complex program. Do those two things, or maybe four things, if we encounter like push and pop, does that stuff make sense?
Sure. Can you go back to the code examples where we actually saw the push and pop symbols? Yeah.
This one or further back?
Yeah, that's good. Let me stare at that for a second. I know return, like return does all like push, maybe not return. return does all the cleaning up, right? Like, that's all implied in that instruction.
Yeah.
So, I just want to make sure when I do what I'm doing.
Yeah, and so some of the stuff, a little bit, when we just look at this part of it first, or just look at this like separately, I think it's in those updates to RIP are implicit in that call. They're not like the next instruction, right? So the next instruction is still a move, and that's what it'll come back to when it returns. But there's all this other stuff that's happening that's like implicit in this call instruction that happens under the hood, which is like what we're like looking at right now. And the same thing with the return instructions.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make that clear. Thanks for clarifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that wasn't clear. And I actually think looking at that slide before, like talking through the other slides kind of muddy that in my brain too, because what am I looking at? Why is it not like telling me what I want to like talk about? Right. That is what
I found that to be confusing in assembly language. Like we learn basically like the instructions to do it, you know, explicitly. And then like there were instructions that did it implicitly. Like I remember like mixing and matching the
data. Yeah. So the only thing I think that return can be I think that you can implement return on its own, but I think that for some reason you can't like implement call. I mean, like this label or whatever. But I feel like there was something, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can actually like imitate both of those things with just assembly language. But I think that there's something about the program counter or the instruction pointer that like makes that like not feasible. But I might be wrong about that. I do remember in assembly, we were able to, like the way that we programmed in at least like that version of assembly, which was a little bit simpler than this, that we would just do jump labels for that stuff. Okay. Okay, so I think that I don't want to get too much further than Matt's section, and I want to say, David, do they keep going into data flow? I don't think they did, but I will say we can go back now. I know that Matt introduced this. This is just kind of review stuff. I know that Matt introduced this like little talk that he was encouraging his students to look at. So if you want to learn a little bit more, it's about this, this like notorious like comment in this code. You're not expected to understand this. And I think he said that Dr. Suma has talked about this before too. So there's like a link in the slides to that if you're interested in that. And I think you guys all have the base knowledge to like listen to a talk like that and get something out of it at this point. Did he say anything else about that, David or Sarosh? I kind of was checked out during the first part of that, of the lecture doing other stuff, so. Cool. Well, if that is that, like I said, if I don't know what's up with you as far as Shella, please just reach out with me and let me know, like, regardless, because we're going to start grading those, I think, soon.
What chapter is this again? I'm sorry.
We're back in chapter 3. So I'm not exactly, I would have to look to you. I don't know the section number off the top of my head.
No worries.
So
I'll find it.
But that's where we are now. We're back in 3. 3 is a pretty long chapter. We split it up. And yeah, this stuff is very cool. And I actually have some other diagram, get into like what the call function and what the callee function do. I have some other diagrams that I think are really helpful that I'll throw in addition to the slides as far as visualizing that. And that will make Attack Lab a lot easier and I think more fun, and then hopefully get you into doing other things like maybe CTF stuff and things like that in general. But that's it. I have nothing else. So if you guys have questions, you're welcome to ask. If you, or we can talk about anything.
I'm going to bounce. Thank you.
Yep. See you later. All right. Oh, I guess I will sign up too. And then, let me know if you haven't turned in Shell Lab yet, or if you.
I'll be back to you later.
All right.
Adios.
Bye.